Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Pun Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. I am your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. Now, we still have a ton of trades and free agency news to dive into and discuss, so we'll get right into it. The first move we're going to discuss is a trade. Rather, the sign and trade of DeMar DeRozan from the Bulls to the Sacramento Kings. So let's go over the full trade details first. DeMar DeRozan was signed and traded to the Kings. Harrison Barnes and a 31 Kings pick swap went to the San Antonio Spurs, and then Chris Duarte and 2 seconds went to the Bulls. There's obviously a lot of talk on the Bulls and, their mismanagement of their team for the past couple of years, I'd say, and their hope in their push for the play-in, which your mileage may vary on that. That was a little hopeless to me. We won't stray too much into that. We're just going to talk about fantasy here and dynasty basketball at that. So let's start with the Kings first. Now we have a pretty crowded Sacramento Kings lineup that, they have a lot of players who need the ball in their hands. De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, and DeMar DeRozan all like operating with the ball in their hands a pretty good amount. And they all see pretty sizable usage. And we've seen this before with plenty of teams. When this happens, all their usage is going to take a hit. It's not going to be, they all take a proportional hit down. I'm probably expecting Sabonis to actually take the biggest hit down, maybe increase that playmaking a little bit, but probably the most overall hit down. And then Fox and DeMar DeRozan, just a little bit of a hit down. And I mean, yes, we can theorycraft that, DeRozan and Sabonis play more handoff games. Maybe Fox moves off ball. Maybe it all works out nicely. But it's really hard to project that. I mean, we saw that with the Suns last year. They had Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and they all just took little hits down. Granted, Booker and Durant still got theirs, but that was partially due to Bradley Beal being injured. Fox and Sabonis and DeMar DeRozan all tend to play a good amount of games, a good amount of minutes. And I just think they all take a little bit of each other's production. Maybe not to an extent where I think it really dings your dynasty value too much, but it's definitely a slight decrease. Who I'm really the most concerned about here, though, is Malik Monk. Now his offense off the bench isn't as needed. The Kings actually have someone else who can dribble the ball. That's been, a little bit of an unnoticed issue for Sacramento, is that besides De'Aaron Fox, who do they have that could dribble the ball off the court? It was literally just Malik Monk. We saw that pretty clearly when Malik Monk went down with injury this past season. I mean, yeah, Keon Ellis, Davion Mitchell, they're fine, acceptable players, but they're not that great. I guess I'm also forgetting to mention Kevin Huerter in this equation too, but he's still not someone that you probably want bringing the ball down for you in playoff situations. Regular season, okay, fine. You could probably get away with that, but it's still definitely a weakness. I'm expecting the Kings to probably stagger Fox and DeRozan for most of those 48 minutes of the court. And yeah, they should be the primary ball operators. That is their best role, and they're both pretty good at it. So where does Malik Monk fit into this? I mean, his off-ball shooting and movement, that's going to be very useful for those players, and just his general spacing. His ability to attack a mismatch and use his speed of his, that's going to be beneficial as well as DeMar DeRozan and De'Aaron Fox could see a majority of the defensive attention. But that puts Monk more in a scoring role, which isn't bad, but he's really increased his playmaking growth the past couple seasons, and that's where a lot of the increase in his fantasy value has come from. So I'm expecting his playmaking usage to probably be impacted the most on this team, which means, points and threes are nice, but without those assists, you're not getting as much value from him. So I'd be definitely worrying a little bit as a Malik Monk owner. And on that note, I'm definitely concerned about Kevin Huerter. He's becoming a bit more of an afterthought on this Kings team, where, yes, his spacing is going to be useful, but they definitely don't need his playmaking as much now. He's could even be the fourth or fifth guard, depending on how they do these lineup configurations. He's probably going to need to play some of the even wing, which isn't his ideal role, but he'll provide some spacing there. But, if he's kind of the odd man out, I think the best hope, if you are a Kevin Herter manager, is you're hoping for a trade away. He still makes a decent salary and should still be a decent trade chip for some team out there. And I mean, like, could the Magic use him? Yeah. I mean, if they don't, they probably don't necessarily need Cole Anthony as much. And you could just have Kevin Herter play and provide some spacing. And you have some bigger teammates who can help absorb some of his size issues. And you don't need his playmaking as much. That could be better value for him. And that's just an example for Kevin Herter. But on this Kings roster, I think it's a little hard to fit in. And why I especially think he doesn't fit in as well now, and this is connecting to the next players that I'm liking here, is because the Kings will need some defensive stalwarts if you're playing Fox, DeRozan, and Sabonis. That's not really a great defensive core right there. And while I like Keegan Murray, who is definitely going to start with that group, I like Keegan Murray defensively, but I don't love him. He's not enough of a game changer at this point in his career. You're going to need another good defensive player. So here comes Keon Ellis. I think this kind of actually solidifies his role in a little bit, which is good for his minutes. I don't know if that will come in fantasy production, but hey, if he racks up some defensive stats, some threes, and just a little bit of trickle of stats elsewhere, I think that's probably a little more than we may have hoped for previously. I think we probably see him play more minutes per game than Malik Monk, which I think might have been hard to think of as of 2 weeks ago, even. I also like what that means for Devin Carter, who is out with a labrum injury now, but he's another one of those defensive first players who can also provide some offensive spark. Maybe we even see them compete for that role some. Maybe. I frankly just like both of those players ahead of Kevin Herter, though, in these Kings pecking order. And speaking of Keegan Murray, with DeMar DeRozan now in that lineup, I don't think we'll see Murray be able to explore his on-ball potential as much, which I don't like for Keegan Murray individually. I don't think it's great for his dynasty outlook. DeMar DeRozan is, you know, he signed for 3 years. That third year has a partial guarantee, but it's significant enough where I would right now plan for DeRozan to be there for probably the full three seasons, which means, yeah, I don't think there's as much usage that Murray can just take on. Granted, I love him in his role as a three-point shooter, providing some defense with okay steals and blocks, not great. But he's not going to get a chance to show if he has more. Again, that's not saying it's bad for Dynasty Fantasy. He's still going to be, I think, a solid play. But there's definitely a little less upside to him. And it just makes him more, you know, we're probably looking at more as middle ground than any upside scenarios for him. So for the Kings, yeah, I mean, I think this just hurts all their players in some form or fashion. That's just what happens when you basically, when you trade away Harrison Barnes, who, you know, doesn't see the most usage, and you bring in a player like DeMar DeRozan, who demands a good amount of usage. I think it definitely increases their talent level. But yeah, for Dynasty, I don't think us managers are too stoked about it and what it means for their players. Let's move on to the Bulls side of this. And honestly, I kind of discussed the Bulls on last episode a pretty good amount, and that was assuming that DeMar DeRozan was leaving. So with that in mind, Josh Giddey, Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu, even, I think they all have safe enough roles. You can throw in Patrick Williams at list as well. I think now we can be pretty certain Modest Buzelis will see a good amount of minutes his rookie season. And yeah, I think it just solidifies what we were already thinking the past week with all the Bulls players. And don't forget about Zach LaVine, too. He's still in the building. And I actually really like him as a buy-low guy right now. I think it's pretty clear right now that the Bulls aren't going to give additional draft assets or, you know, player value or prospects, whatever, to move off Zach LaVine's contract. So LaVine's going to have to play, and he's going to have to show his value. The best way to do that if you're the Bulls is to put the ball in his hands and let him prove that he still has it. I frankly think that he still is a pretty good player and has just been mired by the Bulls and their stink. And, I mean, he's had injuries as well. I'm hoping that with the full offseason and even, you know, taking the last couple months off recovering with the surgery, that he can come back, kind of show flashes of his old self, and we can be happy about him in Dynasty basketball. I mean, I know I have him in a league myself, so I'll admit to some bias here, but I honestly do think he's a bit of a buy low, and you can maybe capitalize on managers just wanting to get off of him at whatever price. I think he's going to see minutes. He's going to be in line for usage. So I'm kind of interested to see where Zach LaVine goes. For the Spurs side of this, to wrap this up, you probably just need Keldon Johnson some. Honestly, are Keldon Johnson and Harrison Barnes that different of players now? Probably not, except obviously Keldon Johnson is younger. But, I mean, he was pretty mid. I think that's honestly the easiest way to say it. And that's kind of who Harrison Barnes is, too. Both are credible NBA rotation forwards, which, granted, the team does need some of those. So I think they both just see decent minutes. But I think part of the equation is how much are the Spurs going to want to invest in some of their other prospects? So Jeremy Sochan is the main name who comes to mind here. Do the Spurs actually play Keldon Johnson and Harrison Barnes a little over Jeremy Sochan to maybe prioritize, obviously, Wembanyama, but maybe Stephon Castle as well? Do they value that extra spacing? Because Jeremy Sochan is not there yet. I know his three-point field goal percentage kind of doesn't look too ugly. He is not really being guarded as a shooter. He's not a player who I think would really help Stephon Castle out too much if the Spurs want to prioritize that. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Spurs have shown a pretty heavy investment in Jeremy Sochan in the past. But it does concern me a little bit. Then again, the Spurs were clearly getting the first-round pick swap. That was the price of business here for them and why they made this move. It definitely wasn't for Harrison Barnes. But I'm a little curious what happens there. So just keep your eye on the Spurs and see how they handle that forward rotation early on. I think it's going to be pretty telling. If they invest in Sochan early, then they still have a faith in them that maybe we should have as well in Jeremy Sochan. All right, let's move to some free agent signings now. The biggest one we have left to discuss has to be Isaiah Hartenstein to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And this was their cap space move. We talked on the last spot how Philly utilized their cap space to sign Paul George. The Thunder used theirs to go out and sign Isaiah Hartenstein. Signed him for 3 years, $87 million. With a third-year team option, which is interesting for a number of reasons, but this is still a very large commitment to Hartenstein. When you pay a player this much money, and this is kind of your crowning jewel of your offseason, this is your big move, yeah, Hartenstein is going to see good minutes. I would expect closer to the 30 minutes per game than the 25 minutes per game he just saw last season. You don't make this big money move without some intention of fitting this player into your lineup. So what is Hardenstein's role in the Thunder? We saw in the playoffs, and I think throughout the regular season as well, that they were willing to sacrifice some of their rebounding for their five-out spacing. But it definitely hurt them at times, and they didn't really even have that as a fallback option. It's not like they could even really go big and try to, rebound or match up well against players, or against teams with size, rather. So I think Hartenstein is definitely going to be a good value add there. He's also someone that can provide additional playmaking. You see him in moments and spurts on the teams he's been on throughout the years, the Knicks, the Clippers, even some on the Rockets, really utilize some nice short roll passing ability and even some high post, wing passing potential as well. He has good vision, he has soft hands, and the Thunder are definitely a team that would recognize that and utilize that. Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks, he's not a head coach who just wants his centers doing that. He just wants his centers rebounding hard, setting good screens, playing defense. The Thunder are definitely a team that utilize their players' strengths, though. So I think we could see a little bit of a tick improvement in Hartenstein's assist numbers. Not just in, numbers and assists per game. I mean, that's just going to come if he plays more minutes, as I think he will. But I think his assist rate's also going to increase as well. Could he get up to 4 assists per game? It's probably a little optimistic, but I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's crazy for Isaiah Hartenstein. What's also good about the money is that I think he just has very good security for his role. If Hartenstein had stayed with the Knicks, we may have seen just Thibodeau ride the hot hand between him and Mitchell Robinson. But on the Thunder, I mean, yes, you have Chet Holmgren there. We'll get to him in a second here. But really, who else do they have as kind of this bigger center, this bigger traditional center? Jalen Williams? I mean, he's even undersized himself. Isaiah Hartenstein will probably receive the bulk of, if not all of, the traditional center minutes on the Thunder. And you have to like that for his value. You have to feel good feeling confident in the security of his role. Now let's move on to Chet Holmgren now. Honestly, I thought it would hurt his dynasty value a little more, but when I looked into it, I kind of thought, you know what, there's plenty of room for them to coexist. And I thought that going in, and initially as well, but the Thunder just have that much room to improve their rebounding rate, where I don't think this is going to hurt Chet on the boards too much. Holmgren himself has plenty of room to increase his rebounding. But as we discussed with the Thunder as a team, they were, I believe, in the bottom 10 of rebounding rate last year. They just have a lot of room to improve there in general. That doesn't involve, you know, it doesn't involve players losing rebounding opportunities. It just could mean becoming a better rebounding team in general. So I don't actually expect Chet to lose that many boards, really. I think he can see the same amount of rebounding opportunities he saw last season. So, yeah, I don't really ding him that much. And then, especially in a dynasty context, not just a fantasy context, but a dynasty context, we're talking about, you know, we're talking 3, 5, even maybe 7 years out, we're trying to project these players. If Chet is going to become, you know, a more usage player, a more complete, you know, forward slash center, like a center option, a big option, then Hartenstein isn't taking that usage away from him. If Chet is going to round out, become a, you know, a better three-point shooter, a better passer, and a better on-ball hub, I think that can happen with Hartenstein. They can even help each other out. You know, imagine Hartenstein getting the ball on the, you know, upper paint area, and then Chet coming in from the weak side corner, and there's no big man to cover him. All this said, I am not worried about Chet right now. Potentially, we could see like a one-year dip, but I believe in Chet. I believe in the talent. I believe in his all-around game, where he can easily coexist on the Thunder with Isaiah Hartenstein. And then what does it mean for the rest of the team? Now, honestly, as we mentioned earlier, there's not really many center options here. You know, I like Jalen Williams as kind of a small bit role backup big, and he could honestly stay in that role. He can still do that. That's someone you were talking about as a smaller dynasty asset anyways, you know, down in the 200s in the rankings. It's not really changing his outlook all too much, or too dramatically, really. And they don't really have anyone that far in the pipeline where I'm worried what it means for them as a prospect. And I don't think Hartenstein is really going to impact the other OKC players too much. If anything, the Thunder could probably use someone with a little bit more playmaking and passing. So maybe we see Hartenstein help Jalen Williams add that element to his game a little more. His off-ball shooting isn't actually as much as you'd like. You could see him just, you know, I'm going to call it now. We're going to see highlights, not highlights, but we're going to see tape where Hartenstein finds Isaiah Joe in the opposite corner for a three. That's going to be a play that happens. You're going to see Hartenstein finding a cutting Aaron Wiggins on the baseline. That's going to be a play that we see happens. So I actually think this Hartenstein just helps your team in general. I'm looking forward to Washington Thunder even more. I think this is a really solid move for them. And I really don't think it hurts anyone's dynasty value here too much. Now let's get into some individual teams, because I think it's easier to discuss some of these teams and all their individual moves together. First, let's dive into the Pistons here. And yeah, some might say the Pistons pistoned here a little bit. They assigned Tobias Harris to 2 years, about $26 million per year. They also re-signed Simone Fontecchio. And then they also went out and signed Malik Beasley. Yet another player they acquired was Tim Hardaway Jr. And you suddenly actually have a pretty crowded rotation. I mean, you could also call it a deep rotation too, but when you have, I guess, a bunch of players that maybe aren't too great yet, it feels weird calling that a crowded and deep rotation. But yeah, that's just kind of the case with the Detroit Pistons. They have now a pretty solid mix of players who just got paid, but also prospects and players who probably need a little bit of playing time too. So let's talk about the guard positions there. You know, you got Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Malik Beasley. Tim Hardaway Jr. might have just been a salary dump acquisition for them, but I mean, his shooting and spacing and his willingness to shoot, I think that's something that's overlooked a lot when people discuss spacing and shooting. They just look at the three-point percentage. I know Tim Hardaway Jr.'s three-point percentage isn't that great. It's about league average, 36-37%. But when you are willing to take the volume of threes and opposing teams guard you like you're a shooter, that makes a huge amount of difference on the rest of the team. I think Hardaway Jr. and Beasley, they're both players that are going to take shots and will help the spacing of that team, will help the other guards, just it will open up some lanes for them. And I think because of that, they are going to see minutes. And people might get frustrated by that. They might get frustrated that Jaden Ivey isn't going to see maybe as much time. I don't think Ivey will see as many minutes this year, but if he is playing those minutes with Tim Hardaway Jr., Malik Beasley, maybe some other shooters, that gives him really a better lineup configuration to see the type of player he is. So in a weird way, I kind of like this for Jaden Ivey, because I think we're going to see the real Jaden Ivey, whether that's for good or for bad. And then just touching on Cade Cunningham, we'll get into some of the other players here later that don't help his spacing, but there are definitely some veteran acquisitions here which help his spacing. So I think he's going to be helped a little bit here. Not enough to really change my dynasty outlook on him at all, but I at least feel more confident that he's going to have a little bit more help in that department. For the forward rotation, wings and forward, you've got Tobias Harris. He's going to play. He got good money. It's good for him. Stabilizes his value. He should have a decent role, 25-30 minutes per game, where he just puts up okay stats across the board. And that's perfectly fine. There is room on plenty of Dynasty Fantasy teams for a player who just can do some stuff. That is perfectly fine. Simone Fontecchio, he is a player that, honestly, I thought he got massively underpaid. I really like his game as just a credible enough 3 and D player. But you also have recent draft picks, Oscar Thompson and Ron Holland on that team. And I don't know how the Pistons are going to prioritize them all, honestly. If you're looking for just shooting, you have to play Fontecchio. Fontecchio, I think, will get minutes in that regard, just like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Malik Beasley we discussed earlier. But if you want to see what Oscar Thompson and Ron Holland have, you have to play them minutes as well. I think we're going to see kind of the wings and forwards, their 3 and 4 spots, basically be Tobias Harris, Simone Fontecchio, Oscar Thompson, and Ron Holland. So just doing simple math, 96 minutes per game for 2 positions. Okay, divide by 4. Okay, maybe we just see 25 to 30 minutes per game for 2 of them, and then 20 to 25 for the other 2. And in a weird way, this kind of caps the initial upside for Ron Holland and Oscar Thompson in my eyes, because I think they're going to be kind of battling for either starter or backup minutes, because I think it will be very untenable to play both of them together for major minutes, unless one of their shooting increases. But if that's going to happen, I don't think Thompson's and Holland's shooting is going to be that good this year. So you can't play them together, which just, they kind of cap each other's upside. I think they'll both get minutes. I think we'll see what improvements come from both. But don't be surprised if you're frustrated by Oscar Thompson's minutes in year 2. I honestly think he might play closer to 20, 25 minutes than 30 minutes. And that's okay. He has holes in his offensive game he needs to work on, and he'll get plenty of, I think he'll get plenty of chances to develop that more. Getting to the bigs, I think this relegates Isaiah Stewart to a backup center role behind Jalen Duren. I think that's actually is positive for field goal percentage, because he kind of prefers just taking a lot of threes and hanging on the perimeter. I think he would benefit himself playing more of an interior traditional big role, with who pops out occasionally behind the line. So I think it's good for his field goal percentage, actually, which has actually been pretty poor for a big the past couple seasons. But for Isaiah Stewart, if he's seeing less minutes, you're just not going to get as good production. You're going to have less counting stats. I think we'll still see decent boards from him. He's just that good of a rebounder. But in terms of points and other stats, I think they'll be a little down. You have to downgrade Isaiah Stewart a little bit. Or at least I would downgrade Isaiah Stewart and play him in more of a backup role. So this is how I see the Pistons. I think as dynasty managers, when we like seeing the youth be featured more predominantly than these old veteran wash players, I think we're going to actually come away a little disappointed from them this season. I think we're going to be frustrated by the roles and the minutes we're seeing. But I hope that they just stagger the lineups correctly, that all their prospects get some time, to at least enough minutes to, you know, see their development and let them play, but also being in well-constructed lineups. I'm hopeful JB Bickerstaff can do a good job of that. Let's move on to our last team today, and that is the Golden State Warriors, who made a lot of various moves, so we'll just kind of recap it in one fell swoop. Players out, Chris Paul left to the San Antonio Spurs, and Klay Thompson was signed and traded to the Dallas Mavericks. Who they brought in was D'Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson, and Buddy Hield. So this may seem like they have a lot of bodies in the room. They have a pretty crowded guard rotation now. You got Steph Curry. Now you got Brandon Podziemski. You got D'Anthony Melton. You got Buddy Hield. You got mainstay Gary Payton II. At the wings, you got Jonathan Kuminga. You still have Andrew Wiggins. Now you have Kyle Anderson. You got Draymond Green, who probably will be their center, but is a big for them, you know, being big slash forward as well. And then for the bigs, Draymond Green. You got Trayce Jackson-Davis. You have Kevon Looney as well. You got a lot of bodies. But I actually think a lot of these players that I just listed can give you solid value in Dynasty. Yes, the upside will be limited here. We've seen Kerr and company the past few seasons kind of go with playing the hot hand, much to the frustration of us managers who are trying to predict minutes here and to see some consistent run and some consistency from the Warriors. But hey, if they're playing, you know, between 20 and 30 minutes per game for all those players I listed, that's enough time to give you actually some pretty solid dynasty value. I mean, we saw that from Brandon Podziemski's last year. We've seen that from Buddy Hield in the past. We've seen that from Kyle Anderson. We've seen that from D'Anthony Melton. All those players can give you good stats in those minutes. Yes, the upside is limited. I don't think we're going to see some massive Podziemski starter minutes or anything like that. Hey, but maybe he's running more bench units. Maybe he garners a greater percentage of usage in those minutes. Maybe it's a little bit of a wash in that regard. Yeah, maybe he sees a little less minutes, more usage. But I think that's still fine for Dynasty. This is still year two, and I think you'll still see solid returns for him, as with all the players on the Warriors I just mentioned. So in that regard, I think I've seen some talk, you know, the Warriors are going to be a frustrating team to look at. And I think for a redraft fantasy league, yeah, that's going to be the case. I could definitely see, oh, Buddy Hield's gone cold, and so Brandon Podziemski is getting more minutes for his defense. Oh, Andrew Wiggins is kind of running cold, so they're trying Kyle Anderson more. Oh, and then Kyle Anderson's not doing good, so Andrew Wiggins are trying him again. But in terms of dynasty, in terms of projecting their outlook and on a more long-run orientated view, I think we're going to see what we want to see from these players. Talking about some specific names now. With the departures of Chris Paul and Klay Thompson, that's a decent amount of usage and on-ball reps. So if you are a Jonathan Kuminga manager, I think you should feel pretty safe with his role. It seems like the Warriors are, I don't want to say all in on Kuminga as their next big player, but I think they're kind of forced into it a little bit. And not to say they don't have faith in Jonathan Kuminga, but it feels like they're getting to the point where, yep, you know what? let's see what he's got. We're going to allow him to be that guy and be that forward for us. And I'm interested to see what he can do. He had an encouraging, you know, January, February run last year, then kind of fell off a little bit, but maybe he increases on-ball reps and passing. I don't think it's in the cards. I don't think that's really his strength, but if it does, that would complement his scoring game very nicely. Andrew Wiggins, yeah, he is still there. You have to see if he rebounds. He's been dealing with some personal issues the past few seasons. I don't want to speculate on those too much, but it's clearly been affecting his play. Do we just see him bounce back a little bit and, hey, have acceptable field goal percentage, some threes, some boards, some defensive stats? It could happen. His value is pretty low right now for most dynasty managers, so maybe just see what happens there. Could rebound a little bit. For Buddy Hield, he is a player who I have felt has always been underappreciated. I feel like he's been disrespected in dynasty and free agency and trades, like in the NBA as well. And he is an elite, yes, I said elite shooter. He always has a very high 3-point attempts per 75 possessions. He always has a pretty strong 3-point percentage make. He has strong movement shooting as well, which, I mean, that's shown in your 3-point attempt rate. But just in terms of how he moves off ball, when Nick Nurse unearthed him against the Knicks, I believe that was game 7, and he had an amazing first half, and then it just went away from him, which I was kind of baffled. Like, I get he has some flaws on the defensive end, but he did so much for your offense that I think you just doesn't show up necessarily his raw stats, but just in the way he helps open up the lane for others. And yeah, do we have splash buddies? I'm not going to take credit for that nickname, but I'm very curious about Buddy Hield in Golden State. And he could be a nice little buy-low target for managers who have lost faith. Or rather, buy-low target from the managers who have lost faith in Buddy Hield. And De'Anthony Melton and Kyle Anderson, I think we can just see more of the same from them. They're both always been solid role players, and they'll get their chance on Golden State. I think they also both have enough, you know, ball movement in their game that is very valued in Steve Kerr's system, and I'm excited to see what roles they fill. I think they both can have nice little bit-sized roles with, you know, minutes in the 20s, maybe upper 20s for Melton. Maybe that's a little optimistic, and then lower 20s for Kyle Anderson. We know as dynasty managers that that is enough time for them to produce what we want to. So again, I think they're nice little buy-low targets for dynasty managers. And I am curious to see their roles on the Warriors. That will do it for this episode of the Punt Intended podcast. Summer League is going to be right around the corner. Next pod, we're going to discuss ways to scout Summer League properly, what to keep in mind when evaluating, and I'm probably going to pump the brakes a little bit on players' performances you might be getting hyped about. We still haven't addressed all the free agency moves as well. We are going to finish that up in the next pod, so be on the lookout for that. That should be out Monday morning in your podcast feeds. And lastly, my dynasty rankings are in progress, factoring in free agency and Summer League performances. Granted, Summer League performances aren't going to factor in too much, unless it's in the case of someone like a Keontae George who really pops some new skills that we haven't seen him flash before, or seen a prospect flash before, really. But we'll get all into that and how to scout Summer League on the next pod. That said, be ready to watch some Summer League.